The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I was wrestling with this whole idea of, do we give trophies for just showing up? No winners, no losers. We're all victors here. We all should get trophies. We participated, we breathed. Therefore, don't deny me my trophy. And I got to thinking about that. I realized that I practice some version of that. As I've gotten older, I've won less and less things that I compete for. So I've decided that I can still have trophies. I go buy them. Oh, yeah. I just recently won a competition in doubles badminton and then curling. And my favorite trophy was second place in cliff diving. Yeah, I've got those. You can buy them. I'm good at everything now. I don't even have to participate. I just get the trophy and then have them put what I want on the little piece down at the bottom of the trophy. My next one I think I'm going for is powerlifting, national bench press title, 740 pounds or something like that. I'm going for that. But maybe I won't put 740. I might put 550. That 740 is a little showy, you know. People might not believe it, seeing a 170-pound guy do 740. Okay, so they don't believe 520 either. Okay, so they don't believe 300 either. What's your point here? Good to have you with me on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is E-Person Monday, where we, a few years back, decided we have to find a way to address some of these emails, because the emails are as plentiful as the calls, if not more so. And I wanted to cherry-pick those emails that come in. They have to be kind of a certain length. If the email is 1,500 words long, there's really no way I can edit that down. Likewise, if it's written by some guys, one guy sent me one, he said, Dr. Ray, problem, period. Sister, period. Advice, question mark. Now, I do need a little more than that. Not much. Maybe just a verb or two to help me out. So we will get to some of these emails shortly. This is a tricky question because there are so many variables involved. And you could legitimately say, Dr. Ray, I think you're being extremely simplistic. So let me throw the question out. And then you could normally correct me if this was a call-in show, but you can't because this is an e-person show. So you can't call in and correct me. So I feel a little more brazen. If somebody were to ask your spouse, who is your husband or your wife nicest to? Forgive me for using the word nice. It's a fluffy word. But for our purposes, let's let it encompass kindness, charity, and tolerance, and forgiveness, a whole range of good behavior toward a spouse. Would your spouse say that they are the person you are nicest to? Or would they cite somebody else? Somebody that they know, a friend of yours, maybe your mother, whomever. In other words, would your spouse believe that taking all things into account, you treat them better than you treat anybody else.
Now, Dr. Ray, that's a little bit of an unfair question, isn't it?
Because first of all, some of the people that I get along with better don't do the things to me that my spouse does. They don't say the things to me that my spouse does. I'm not arguing that. I don't doubt that. When you live with someone, you're going to see the good and the bad. I got that. However, even with the bad, you have plenty of opportunity to show your spouse that I will do what I can to treat you well. A counter argument to that, I hear it in therapy. If I did that, if I really attempted to be more pleasant, more forgiving, more affectionate, kinder, slower to anger, my spouse would take advantage of that. They would think that anything they do or say is fine because I don't react badly. Actually, the reverse is true. Most people respond better to good treatment. They themselves change. May take a while, and it may only be by the inch, but isn't an inch better than what you're getting now? It's an unusual person. It is. That will take kind, gentle, good behavior, tolerant, forgiving kind of behavior, and take full advantage of it and run with it. And if you're married to somebody like that, then you got a lot more problems in your marriage. But you would want, I would think, your spouse to say, my husband treats me better than he treats anybody. Or my wife treats me better than she treats anybody. I believe I can say that about my wife. She truly does. She looks for ways to be good to me. Even if it means every morning when I get up and I sit at the island and she brings coffee over. And she gets the milk out. And my little fake sugar, whatever it is I use. It's always there. Now, obviously, that's one tiny little thing. But I think I can safely say that from what I know of her, and I believe she treats everybody well, but what I know of her, she treats me better. Now, you have more opportunity to treat your spouse better. Because for the most part, your spouse is the person you most interact with over the most concentrated period of time. You have many chances to be kind or to be forgiving or to be generous or to be affectionate or to be charitable. You have those opportunities. The people you work with or the people that you might associate with through a group or people at the parish, yeah, you could be nice to them. You probably have far less chances of getting irritated with them because the relationship isn't as close. It's not as deep in most cases. It's more social superficial.
No, Dr. A, these are my friends.
Yeah, but they still are not at the depth, the concentration of the relationship that you would have with a spouse. So you have many more opportunities to not say a harsh word, not to retaliate. Oh, Dr. A, you're being so unreasonable. I'm not saying you can do this perfectly. Who can? But I'm saying if your goal is to want to hear your spouse say, yes, he treats me better than he treats anybody, or she treats me better than she treats anybody, then you can start on that path. That's all I'm saying. You want him to say you are the one who treats them better than you treat anybody else. All right, when we come back, I'm going to dig into the scrolling stack on my phone here on some goody persons. I'm Dr. Ray.
Call your doctor if you have high fever, stiff muscles, and confusion to address a possible life-threatening condition.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere, and that's a doctor's order. Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I might have gone to church, you know, at Christmas time, gradually quit going. It's not as scary as I thought it was. It's a much more warm and open place, and God really is about love. It's not about the rules and the things that I remember as a young child. It really is about the love that God has for each one of us that's so deep and wonderful.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
This program brought to you in part by the nonprofit Angelicum Academy.
This is Father Joseph Fessio with an important message for Catholic families experiencing the effects of the shutdown of schools and employment. Catholic education is essential. You can save $100,000 as your high school students continue their Catholic education online while earning 75 college credits and an accredited associate's degree for just $3,500 per year, and an accredited bachelor's degree just 1 year later, age 19. To learn how, go to angelicum.net.
Do not get my hopes up telling me that you have a chocolate lab if you're just talking about a kind of dog. Adrienne, that's for you. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on E-Person Monday. This is a variant of The Doctor Is In. We try to do this every Monday to get a little bit on top of the E-persons that come in. My 12-year-old daughter is struggling. Like really struggling. She's having a hard time making friends at school, and last evening she took money from our bedroom. I just discovered that. At first she denied it. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. In one of my earliest books, I talked about the dynamic duo, which is stealing and lying. Almost always when a I don't want to say almost always. A good part of the time, when a kid is confronted with theft, their first move is denial. They weren't even in the universe when it happened. The two go together. At first, she denied it. Then I questioned her a little further, and she admitted that she deposited it in her school lunch account. I was shocked. I recall as a kid taking loose change from my dad's dresser, and I never felt guilt. As an adult, I know it was wrong, but as a kid, I didn't give it a second thought. Wednesday, after she'd gone to bed, I was looking through her lunch account and discovered that she was buying treats. Okay, so she was using the money for a purpose here. I went up to her bedroom as she was lying there, and we had a talk about what happened with the money and why she was buying so many treats. She said that a girl at school told her that if she bought cookies for her and a few of her friends, she could be part of their group. Now, early adolescent girls are very cliquish. You know this. This is no shock to anybody. They are the cool clique that oftentimes some kids want to enter into but are kept out. The sad thing about this is that oftentimes the cool clique is not where you want your kid to be. You don't want them there. So my first piece of advice to mom here is that she may not be able to do a whole lot about her daughter's desire to be with those girls at school. But she can do a lot about any after-school activities. But Dr. Ray, this young girl needs friends. I agree with that. But the friends have already shown themselves. The friends have said, we're going to use you. We'll be nice to you if you buy us off. Right away, quick, this is not somebody I'd let my 12-year-old daughter hang around with. Friendship or no friendship. All right, let us continue with this. I got to find this is... My husband and I had already decided that she needs to go to reconciliation this weekend, get the remainder of the money from her lunch account and return it, and then do chores around the house to repay and make amends. Good. Good start, Mom. Good enough. Great. I'm just stuck as to how to help her with a friend problem. Well, I'm not sure you can help her with a friend problem. You can explain it. You can ask her questions. You can say, honey, do you think they want to be your friends? If they ask you to buy your way into their group? Is that what you want in a friend? Do you think you'll have to keep buying things for them? What happens if you stop? Why do you want to be part of that group? What is it about them that you think is so cool?
Well, they're the ones that are real popular. They're the ones that everybody looks at. They have their own group, and if I'm in that group, then I think I could be popular too.
If you're not in that group, do you think that makes you any less a good person? In other words, what you're going to do, Mom, is you're going to sit down with her, and you're going to explore with her why she thinks it is so important to be with these kids that she has to purchase her way into their inner circle, and try to show her, as she thinks about it, why that's probably not a good idea and why it's not going to work anyway, even if she could buy her way into their circle. Mom goes on. I tried to explain to her that those girls were just using her, that she shouldn't ever bend her morals to fit in, which at age 12 is sometimes easier said than done. It's heart-wrenching, Dr. Ray. I know. Welcome to parenting. I just want to be as supportive as I can be and also use proper discipline. I didn't call her a thief. I didn't tell her she was bad. I told her that she made a really poor choice and that it was upsetting and disappointing. Help. I think here's where you're struggling, Mom. When kids pull stunts like this that rock your world, and when I talked about this, it was my very first book. It was called You're a Better Parent Than You Think. And it was under the chapter, Is My Child Normal? I made the point that a good proportion of kids, if not a significant majority, will at one time steal something growing up. That's relatively common. And the stealing is usually predicated on the fact that not that they are destitute or hungry, you know, like Jean Valjean in Les Miserables, but that they want it. This is just something they think they should have, or they got a chance through an opportunity along those lines. So because of that, it does happen, and it rocks a parent's world. Oh, my gosh, this is a sign that my morals are not penetrating this child's conscience. This is not happening. Don't go that far. Don't go that far. Your daughter is doing something that is wrong. She knew it was wrong, but she wanted to do it anyway because in her mind she had a justifiable reason for doing it. And I think you need to tell her, sweetheart, don't ever, ever steal from me again. Because what we did this time around, you just had to pay for it, and you had to earn the money to pay for it. But if you steal from me again, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to shut down your privileges for 2 weeks. I did that to my daughter when she was 13. She took $30 off my dresser. She put it in an envelope and wanted to give it to the librarian because she had overdue books. Unfortunately, she left the envelope out. She forgot. And I didn't know how she was going to get to the library anyway, unless my wife brought her. So She was blacked out. She was blacked out for 2 weeks, I think, because of that. After we did all the talking about stealing and then went to confession, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying to you, Mom, is don't panic because she stole. don't think that she's a social misfit, because I would take comfort in the fact that I don't want her associating with this cool clique. Not at all. I probably would advise her to seek out another child that looks like a very pleasant person, but is maybe eating alone or eating with one other person. Look for that person or persons that are not really part of the cool kids, but just seem really nice, decent, pleasant young people. Seek those, because they would be very grateful to have her as a friend, I'm sure. So I'd point that out to her. And then I'd also point out to her, please don't ever steal from me again, honey, because this is what I'll do. All righty. Let me see if I can get myself another one here. That one's there. I don't want to do that one. Let's see what this one is. I have two small children, 4 and 2. I'm concerned about the effects of COVID-19 on their psychological and emotional development, especially in terms of how members of the public view small children with disdain, since they can be carriers. Yeah, that's sad. That's just so sad if that's happening. If you're experiencing that, that's tragic. It's another one of the byproducts of what's going on. My husband and I are therefore following the recommendations to keep children at home as much as possible. We strive to provide a safe place for them emotionally and psychologically by expressing our loves and means appropriate for their ages, touch. In this time of struggle, I think I've even sought to express more loving touch to them in case they sense any stress or anxiety from us. Good idea, Mom. Very good idea. Their behavior suggests that they are happy and are fulfilling, and we are fulfilling their needs. Sure. Plus, they're 4 and 2. I mean, by and large, they're oblivious to what's going on. Their world is 99% your house. Their world is mommy and daddy, especially the 2-year-old. So for the most part, they're not even aware of any of this. They're not going to pick it up. They're not going to sense it through some kind of immature sort of sensory device that we adults don't have. My in-laws recently approached us about getting together to see the children. They have completely stopped getting together with us now for over a month. We used to get together weekly. We're all Catholic, but it would seem that their attachment to this life and the subsequent fear of losing it has caused them to strongly and fully distance themselves from us. They are tremendously anxious and would barely come within 6 feet of us even when they made their request. We, all the adults, had discussed and agreed that if they come to visit us, they will interact and allow the children to interact with them as they normally would. It was expressly stated that they would not change the way they treated or interacted with children because of their fears. I thought it was understood that mask wearing is absolutely prohibited in our home and while in contact with the children. Everyone agreed to our terms. Day of the visit arrives, my in-laws wore masks. They made a point to distance themselves from the children often during the visit. Visit was their idea and desire, and they disregarded the terms of the agreement. Needless to say, I'm enraged. What are the potential psychological and emotional implications for small children to be treated like this over repeated incidents? I'm not supposing that this one event is going to cause permanent psychological harm. Yeah, it's not going to cause any harm at all, dear. Not at all. You don't have to worry about that. The 2-year-old's oblivious. And you could even, if the 4-year-old asks why they had a mask, you could just simply say, well, they're feeling sick and they didn't want to breathe germs. I would like some validation that my concerns for my children are warranted. Yes and no. Part of it is what's going on. I would say to the in-laws, if it's okay, you don't have to come over. If you're that squeamish about it, you don't have to come over. The kids don't understand, well, the 4-year-old anyway, doesn't really understand the mask thing. Or you could simply say, well, if you want to come over with a mask, that's fine. We'll just tell the kids you don't feel good and that you want to not give them anything. You could do that. Okay. But don't worry. At 4 and 2, the one great thing you got going for you is they're oblivious. They don't know how to interpret all this stuff, especially the 2-year-old. The 4-year-old might have some questions, but for the most part, you can dispel those with some quick, simple explanations. Not a problem. Not going to do anything. I wouldn't even worry about that. The biggest concern is, when will your in-laws decide it is safe to come around the children? And I can't see how they're all that worried about getting it from a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old anyway, especially since they've been in your house forever.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Vatican II teaches that every baptized person is a participant in the threefold office of Jesus, which is priest, prophet, and king. So as priest, Christ is a sanctifier. He effects a reconciliation between divinity and humanity, right, by his great sacrifice on the cross. Every baptized person does indeed participate in that, in the measure that we all have that calling to reconcile divinity and humanity, to bring God to people and people to God. That's true of every baptized person. Vatican II further specifies that the ordained priesthood is different, not only in degree, but in kind. And it has to do with the identification between the ordained priest, I think, and the Mass, and a unique relationship to the sacraments. Every baptized person has a task of reconciling divinity and humanity. The ordained priest does it in this sort of heightened sacramental and Eucharistic way.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call to communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Who is Jesus Christ? The question may seem simple, but understanding Christ is essential to living our faith to the fullest. In Captivated by the Master, Father Brian Mullady walks you through the Catholic Church's teaching on Christ, who He is as the Messiah, the second person of the Trinity, and so much more. Captivated by the Master, the latest release from EWTN Publishing, now available at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
I guess it's done, and I can speak now. That's really kind of classy. Dan, did you pick that music just to add a little bit of a, a class to this program? Or what are you saying here, you know? Okay, I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, the program The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. The Monday version, which is E-Person Monday, where we used to go through the stack. I liked a stack. It was hefty. It had substance. You know, you look at that stack and you think, wow, that is clear visual evidence of a lot of contact and communication. The phone does not change thickness. I think the phone should change thickness with the stuff that comes into it. You know, if you've got 152 emails, your phone should be thicker as opposed to if you have three. Nevertheless, I'm going to talk to Christine here. Hello, Dr. A. I hear so much talk in the church about marriage and family, which, of course, is all good. But where is the church invested at all in helping very lonely young Catholic single men and women meet? Where is the church in helping them to meet each other and helping them to foster the beginnings of a good relationship? It feels as though, those especially who have been homeschooled, and I would imagine Christine has been homeschooled, they're thrown out to the wolves, but make sure they come back to the church for everything, marriage and family. Some of these young adults are extremely lonely and do not know where or how to meet other devout Catholic single men or women. Is there any way you can explain or help? It just seems as though the church has been missing with regard to this issue, or I've been missing something right in front of my face. I've reached out to many people in places with not much help. Christine, what you're experiencing is a phenomenon of our times. Given that a majority of young adults have left the boundaries of the church, there are far less of those to meet at church or church activities. My parents, there were five, My mom had four siblings, so there were five of her brothers and sisters. Every one of them was married, and every one of them married a Catholic. My mom and dad met. They're both Catholic. And my dad's brother met, and they were Catholic. So it was much more common two generations ago to travel in a social circle where there were people of like beliefs. Not so anymore. Some of the churches are ahead of others. They have young single groups, and I would suggest you look for parishes in your area that might have young adult single groups or young adult activities, that they didn't stop having such groups for those once they've passed confirmation or graduated from CCD, whomever remains in it after confirmation. There are national groups. There's Young Catholic Professionals. I had them on the TV show once. There are a number of such groups. And some people would even suggest going to places like Ave Maria Singles, where you can put in your profile and look to meet someone in that venue. And I know people personally who have met and married folks from that venue. But you're absolutely correct. I have children myself, my daughters, some of whom are in your situation. For them to meet someone of like-minded values and beliefs is much less likely. Sadly, it is a phenomenon that is very widespread. It isn't yet high profile, with all of the things besieging the church these days. Of course, the loss of young people is huge, but the idea that those faithful young people who stay in the church are finding it harder and harder to meet like-minded singles is very, very true. I cannot tell you how many young single people I meet whose faith means a lot to them, who have as yet to meet someone. This is a cultural byproduct of the movement away from religion. Very much so. It is also a reflection of many parents' distress looking at their young adult children and whom they finally decided to link up with, who may be an atheist or may not at all share the Catholic values and beliefs that this child was raised with, or who may have a questionable history or moralities. And some of that comes from the fact that the young Catholic is saying, there's nothing else out there. I haven't seen anything. I'm hoping that the church in as many parishes will catch up to some of this and recognize, even if it's just Bible studies, some way to invite the young people to the parish in activities. I don't think you can blame the parish totally, though, because those who have tried have found it extremely difficult to get the young people to come. They are distracted with many other things, and church activities are not necessarily high on their list. The best place I have found, and I think this has been true for quite some time, to meet someone like-minded, like-believed, is through friends or family who know you and who know this other person. I have three friends that years ago I introduced to each other, and three of them got married. One has since passed away, but the other two are still married. That's how they met. I said, hey, I've got someone here that I think you might want to meet. So I think keeping your eye open for something like that is an option. Yeah, it is something I hope that the individual parishes catch up to and recognize that if we want to keep some of our young adults there, we've got to at least try to offer them some things. I've spoken to groups like Theology on Tap, which is a lot of young people. So those programs are out there. You might want to do a little searching for them. Oh, I'm glad I kind of grew up in a time where there were people more likely who went to church. I saw a statistic just recently said in 19, I forget what year it was, 62, 70? 75% of people said that religion was very important to their life. That's down to 50, which is even kind of surprising that it's that level. I'm Dr. Ray. Now, Catechism Wisdom with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and Father Larry Richards.
A culture that's materially comfortable gets spoiled. It says, I want my needs met. If I'm married, or even if I'm not, one of my needs, in my mind, might be, I want a child, and I want it now. For Catechism Wisdom, joining me, Father Larry Richards.
Yes.
Catechism says something here that's going to ruffle a lot of folks.
Read me. Let me have it.
All right. Section 2378. A child is not something owed to one, but is a gift. The supreme gift of marriage is a human person. Wait a minute. We got the technology. Like, you know, the old bionic man. We've got the means. We can make it right.
Absolutely.
I want a kid. You know, my 10 children are all adopted. So the supreme gift of marriage, biologically, for me, was not a child. Okay, am I getting ripped off? And is that fair?
The reality of all things is that we're all called to be life-giving, huh? But often God does not call that, like for me, he doesn't call me to be life-giving by having my own children, you know? God's called me, but he still does it. And the same with a couple who can't have children. They can do everything that the church allows them to do, as long as they're doing it to saying, okay, I want God's will in my life. I'm not going to make God do something for me. I'm going to seek God's will. And if I work according to nature and I work according to the teaching of the church, if God decides to give me a child, absolutely, God bless. But if he doesn't, that doesn't mean I can't be fruitful. It can be like you have a go and adopt 10 children. Think about how many children in the world today have no one to care for them or love them. And so if you really, really, really want to be a mother or father, then do as you did.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, TV show, Living Right with Dr. Ray, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the EWTN Global Catholic Television Network, as well as re-aired on Tuesdays and Fridays of the following week. This is E-Person Monday. This comes from Sarah. My oldest daughter is 7. She is a good kid. All right. Now, I've commented many times about this. Typically, parents, when they elaborate on a problem, they want you to know that the kid overall is a good kid. I get that in my office all the time. They'll come in, they'll describe a litany 6 miles long. Then they'll say, but I'm giving you the wrong impression. Overall, he's a pretty good kid. And I'll say, how's that? Well, he's not on drugs or anything like that. One of the new moral high bars. But I'm not teasing Sarah here. I don't doubt that this little child is overall just a pleasant young man. She helps around the house, does chores, helps with the younger children, does well in school. Okay. Now, see why this is important is that here is the picture. Mom is saying, I have a delightful 7-year-old who seems to be smoothly moving into embracing the morals and the upbringing that we're trying to give her. Okay, that's, I think, what I'm reading into this. And then that makes what's about to come a little more parent turbulent. We've been homeschooling recently due to social distancing since her school is shut down. What we are seeing is that she is copying her work, i.e., plagiarizing. An example. She was reading a story and then was supposed to compose 5 sentences about the story in her journal. She simply copied 5 sentences out of the story. Now, we're going to assume that she knew that's not what she was supposed to do. We talked to her about this, told her it was wrong, made her write out on paper for 5 minutes why cheating is wrong. She reacted very emotionally. She cried, broke down for about an hour. This is not the first time, Dr. Ray, we have addressed cheating with her since, quote, homeschooling began. And honestly, we had no idea it was happening prior to homeschooling. Okay, my question there is, was it happening prior to homeschooling? Okay, if you had no idea, are you saying, no, had no indication this was ever happening in school? Let's assume that's what it is. Let's assume that there's something about play school or what she perceives as not real school with mom. So this would be a crime of opportunity. In other words, she had the option. She didn't really see what she was doing in this new schooling as real schooling. So she wanted to get out of it as quickly as she could. When she goes to the school, I'm assuming she's a first grader, maybe a second grader. She goes to the school, it's serious. It's a different building, a different person other than mom. There's a more of an authority structure as she sees it. And better, she may have not tried this there. But she could try it here with mom. So I guess what I'm saying is that this is, it seems, a context wrongdoing. It was there. The opportunity was there. But Dr. Ray, shouldn't she know? Shouldn't she realize this was wrong? This is not how we raise her. Well, she is only 7. And I know the traditional understanding in the age of accountability was 7, but that's a rough, rough, rough estimate. And some kids, yeah, who knows when they become accountable in God's eyes prior. All right. Let's see. We have made her read her essay each morning before she starts her schoolwork to remind her not to copy. And the copying has not happened again since. Hey, good idea. I like it. It's only been about a week, though, Dr. Ray. Well, that's all right. And I don't mean to scare you, but let me tell you something else. I wouldn't be surprised if she did it again. Why? Why not? Hey, who knows? Maybe she's getting tired of certain demands from school. Maybe she doesn't want to do this anymore. So she probably just figures, okay, I'll try to get around this however I can. We are Catholic. She understands that cheating is a form of stealing and lying, and she has been to confession for this. Okay, good. See, here's the thing. You can't anticipate what a child is going to do morally, as you see it, growing up. They're kids. They pull stupid stunts. They pull immoral stunts. And how much it's immoral really depends upon the understanding and maturity of the kid. Now, I don't want to say anything here, Mom, but I got to believe on a regular basis you sin. I know I do. And I'm a grown-up. I should really know better. So we see what our kids do in the process of growing up, and then we get shocked. How could they? We've taught them otherwise. And I guess we could say the same things about ourselves. How could we? Weren't we taught otherwise? Why do I say those things? Why do I do that? I know better. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go back to your first paragraph. You said she's a good kid. All right, so she plagiarized. You deal with it. You showed her this is wrong. I'm going to hold you accountable. Don't do it again. I'll do it some more. Okay. Now here's where the crux comes in. is her behavior normal? Yeah, it is. In the sense that it's a stunt. And kids pull all kinds of stunts. They do all kinds of things they try to get away with. Should I be worried about it? No. Now, if it was chronic and just happened all the time and nothing you did seemed to have any impact on this kid, I probably still wouldn't say be worried about it. I'd say, well, you're going to have to deal with it, and it may not correct itself. I would say that. She is also very emotional, which I think complicates things a bit, because I don't like making her upset. Well, that's okay. She can be upset. She did something wrong. Okay. And I suspect, this adds to my theory, I suspect the reason she got so emotional is because she does have a pretty strong conscience for her age, and she just yielded to temptation. And then when she got caught, and when you reacted, she just felt like, oh, that's awful and terrible. Yeah, probably. So the two seem to go together for me. Do you have any additional advice on how to handle very emotional children? You know, they're emotional. Recognize that if they think they did something wrong and they have an emotional type response, then they're going to do this. My daughter Hannah, when she was little, we corrected her for anything. She kind of started crying, you know. Some of my boys just looked at us like, "Who are you talking to? You talking to me? Why?" Well, I'll admit I did it, but what's the big deal? Some of the girls just kind of just started sobbing. I recently found your podcast. I live in an area where we don't have Catholic radio, but really wish we did. All righty, Sarah. I hope I gave you a few pointers on that. I'm Dr. Ray.
Remember the song, "You Gotta Have Hope? All You Really Need Is Hope?" Well, it's not all you need, but it is one of the three theological virtues. The Catholic Catechism tells us that hope helps us desire heaven and eternal life as our happiness. We trust in Jesus' promise while relying not just on our own strengths, but with the assistance extended by grace from the Holy Spirit. Hope keeps discouragement at bay and sustains us in times of abandonment. It preserves us from selfishness by leading us to the happiness that flows from charity. Christian hope unfolds from Jesus' preaching of the Beatitudes, which raises our hope to heaven as the new promised land. The Catechism says hope is expressed and nourished in prayer, especially the Our Father, the summary of everything that hope leads us to desire. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The EWTN home video highlight for July is The Heresies, Gnosticism. Christianity has fought against this heresy from the beginning, and its errors still infiltrate our culture today. Order your DVD of The Heresies, Gnosticism at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
Research shows that when families openly live and share their faith together, they're more able to respond positively to the challenges they face every day.
So if you're looking for help in creating that joyful place where each member of your family experiences life as a gift from God, then you will want to check out our book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide for Raising Faithful Kids.
You can find this book on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is E-Person Monday. I'd say, just to put a rough estimate on it, 87.265341% of the women who write an E-Person start out with, "Hi, Dr. Ray." The guys are a little more variable. This one's from Joe. He starts out, "Yo, Doc. You commented earlier on how people do a poor job. of accurately predicting how they would react if they were in a certain situation. Well, let me expand upon that. Yeah, to the degree that the situation is an unexpected one or pushes us to the very limits of our self-control, in the calmer moments of assessing how we would react, we could miss it. We could find that indeed this is what I would do in that situation when it arises. Okay. Given that, how do I change that truth so I react the way I would want to? I expect that if I practice, then I can increase the chance I react the right way in a stressful situation. Well, I don't know what you mean about practice, Joe. I think it all comes down to the deepening of your moral beliefs, to the degree your conscience and your beliefs in our Lord's teachings and His church guide your life, then that means that there are less and less situations that you would react counter to what you should react if they were ever to approach you. He goes on. That's why you do fire drills. If there is a real fire, I know what to do, and I do it. Becomes almost like muscle memory. I can develop an elevator speech of testimony to my faith and practice it. Even if I pull it out with someone and screw it up, I can do it again later. But in the other extreme, like being martyred for the faith, I don't want to particularly practice that. I could be like Peter and say I would never deny Jesus, even if it meant I would die with him. But if I'm as poor as predicting my behavior as Peter was, then I'm very likely to deny Jesus when the moment comes. How do I make sure I act the way I would want to act? Well, keeping in mind, again, Peter was a devoted follower of Christ, and he found himself in a very tenuous situation. He found himself in a situation that pushed him to the limits of his weakness. Later on, he was martyred. Later on, he suffered willingly across the board for Christ, much more so than he was willing to do during that time around the fire in the courtyard. So Peter got very good at knowing how he would react in situations, and he reacted that way. But that's because his faith got deeper. That's my suggestion to you. It's not so much a matter that you can practice every situation that you're going to confront and somehow know that, okay, good, I've exposed myself to that situation, and I responded that way. To some degree, you can do that. Personal relationships, maybe. Get along with your difficult father-in-law, and you hang around him a little bit, and you get better at dealing with him. I got that. But in terms of those unpredictable, hard-to-master, highly tempting situations, the depth of your faith is your best defense. And, of course, God's grace, obviously. I try sometimes to tell God, please, if I'm ever confronted with something that's going to push me to my limits, you got to be there with me because I'm not sure I trust me on my own strength. So, please, I got to have your help. And at the very least, keep me away from those situations, perhaps. And I think that could be your prayer, Joe. Dear Lord, don't put me in situations that I'm not sure how I'd react. I'd like to think I would react with maturity and morality and wisdom. But I really don't know for sure. So, either protect me from those situations or give me the strength. It's like St. Paul says, why do I do what I don't want to do? I know how I should act, and then I don't. This is St. Paul, the most prolific author of the New Testament. So, I think the best defense, as I said, is your willingness to let your faith go deeper. In a lot of ways. Not so much just to anticipate potentially tricky situations, but to pray more, to read Scripture more, to read good books, listen to Catholic media, all the things that would make you a more devoted follower of Christ would seem to have a reverse effect in that it would take more and more of an unpredictable situation, of a situation that is quite counter to anything you've experienced before, to throw you for a loop, to actually make you mispredict how you would act. That'd be my suggestion, Joe. Thank you, Dan McGraw, for all you did on that end there at Ave Maria Radio Communications and the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network of some 400 stations. I do so, so very much appreciate it. Good Lord permitting. I'll see you tomorrow when we can talk through these airwaves back and forth. I'm Dr. Ray. Walk with God. Keep walking. Fall, get up.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.